Okay, thanks very much. And yeah, so, well, the title is already the plan of the talk, basically, so I don't put something like this down. So I start with H theory. Well, it's physically certainly interesting to study the low energy physics of the gauge theory. In some sense, that's perhaps the most interesting part from a physicist's point of view. So I want to study the low energy physics. Okay, let's be specific about the gauge theory we want to study. I think it doesn't need any introduction anymore. We have seen several talks introducing the sometimes so-called Gaiotto theories, which are basically associated to a Riemann surface, which I call C. And to these we have seen elements of the recipe to associate to it a gauge theory, an n equals to 2 supersymmetric gauge theory in four dimensions. So that's now what we're interested in. And usually one talks about R4, but from a physical point of view, actually, it is perhaps even more interesting if one starts playing with the geometry on which one puts it, or in other words, puts it on some compact backgrounds. So it's the finite volume problem. Because in a way, the dependence on the volume, or more generally on the choice of the manifold we're putting it on, captures a lot of highly non-trivial information about the gauge theory. So the main examples we have in mind here would be, for example, the three sphere with radius r, or, well, I shall not introduce this in much detail, a manifold which is a circle times r2 epsilon. So this is r2, but with an omega background turned on along these directions. So we have heard talks about what omega background is. So this is sort of partial omega background, where we just have one parameter epsilon being introduced. One may remark that, of course, still, for example, we have here a parameter r, for example, to play with, or epsilon. And in the limit where r goes to infinity or epsilon goes to 0, we're back to R4. And what we recover as the low energy theory is something very familiar, which is Cybergruppen theory. So the decompactification limit gives us Cybergruppen theory. So what we want to study is basically, therefore, deformation of Cybergruppen theory, which corresponds to putting the gauge theory in a finite volume. Let's think about the gauge theory in the Hamiltonian formalism. And from that point of view, if we're thinking about the quantum theory, basically what we need to study is going to be, well, actually the space of states which has the lowest possible, in fact for us, zero energy. So we want to study as the subspace which basically captures the interesting low energy physics, the space of states annihilated by the Hamiltonian. So this is Hamiltonian of our gauge theory, assuming we have constructed it somehow in the Hamiltonian framework. We have supersymmetry. So let's pick one of the supercharges, Q. And a rather well-known fact is that the space of the zero energy ground states is naturally isomorphic to the cohomology of this supercharge. So this is a kind of generalization of the Hodge decomposition, which identifies, which says that, for example, if I start here, within the cohomology, there's always a harmonic, unique harmonic representative, which would be a vector annihilated by the Hamiltonian, which here plays the role of the Laplacian. So just the simple observation which emerges from this is that H0 may be studied in terms of the corresponding topologically twisted theory, which is just the theory which has this cohomology as its space of states. So in particular, this allows us to play with the metric, because that is one of the fundamental properties of the topological twisted theory, that it does not depend on it. OK, so this is sort of preliminary remarks to put the next thing into some perspective. Now, what I want to present is a short summary of the picture which has emerged from the works of Nekrasov, Chatashvili, and Nekrasov and Witten. I mean, in particular, this point of view here was spelled out also it's quite standard. So, so in particular, in the work of Nekrasov and Witten, what they consider is now yet another generalization of M, which is, something like a three-sphere with an omega background, now with the two parameters turned on, which geometrically can be thought of as a circle vibration, a circle vibration over the interval, over a generic point of the interval, we have sitting two circles, where I can roughly, but this is somewhat imprecise, identify the radii with these parameters, epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. Well, in this case, here we have a compact part. So what can be argued to be possible is to represent now the gauge theory effectively by a two-dimensional theory, onto which we now want to focus. So this effective two-dimensional description is in terms of an open two-dimensional sigma model with target being the Hitchian moduli space. I shall recall that in a moment. Maybe before we do that, let's complete. So let's put an asterisk here to remind ourselves that we want to explain something about it. We're living here, in fact, on some interval, because, it's a torus vibration, and at the end of the, can I just finish the sentence? At the end of the interval, in fact, one of these two circles shrinks to a point, and, that is why in this description that Nekrasov and Witten have given, we're talking about an open sigma model rather than a closed one. So, yes.
Yeah, that's my question. You know, how do you look at S3 as a torus cross the interval? Because one has no boundary, the other has boundary. So how do you fix this picture?
That would take me maybe a little too far. So if I think of the, maybe just reduce it by one dimension, yes? So think of the two-sphere as two, then put here the circles, but at the end, of course, the circles shrink to zero size, and now it's sort of a three-dimensional lift of this picture.
But you have to shrink more because what you describe is just the suspension of the two spheres of three spheres. But now you have a suspension of a torus, so you have to squash down, figure eight to a point.
So, okay, the point is, well, only one of them shrinks to a point at the ends of the interval, but maybe...
You're going to put some boundary conditions in.
Yeah, that's right.
To make it equivalent to S3, that's the idea.
That is right, that is right. That is the idea, but I think the question was a purely geometrical one, as far as I understood.
Just geometric.
It's just a notation. It's really that you're fibering the sphere over the interval, and the generic fiber is S1 cross S1.
Right.
By the two ends, you have two different S1s. That's
okay.
So this is the vibration of the three sphere by solid torus. By tori, right?
Oh, I see. So this is just a half vibration.
Exactly, oh, yes. Sorry, I should have said these words. Yes. We have here, we're having a two-dimensional sigma model living on a strip. We have a boundary. And, one of the circles shrinks to zero, but the other remains and, keeps as a parameter its radius. So we can think of the boundary conditions, which are defined just by the dynamics of the gauge theory. So there's nothing, we have to introduce by hand. It is something that is fixed just by studying the gauge theory in this setup. So the boundary conditions, which are found at the two ends, are, carry these parameters epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 respectively. And it turns out that these boundary conditions, this I cannot explain here, they correspond to this isotropic A-brains of Kapustin. So this is what, Nekrasov and Witten argue, that this is just what is determined by the gauge theory. The space H0 is nothing but the space of open, strings is maybe not quite correct, but it's the space, the space of physical states in this topological twisted 2D open sigma model. So let's call it like this. How does the relation with the Hitchian moduli space come about? This I wanted to add some explanation for, very brief again, but one may note that if one just studies these in a Hamiltonian framework, this open two-dimensional sigma model, one finds the following physical degrees of freedom. So on the one hand, the physical degrees of freedom are the zero modes of the scalars AR. So these are just the scalars, labeling the a point in the Coulomb branch that we have encountered very often in this series of lectures. So if we now have our surface C being genus, having genus G and N punctures, that's the number of such scalars that I would get. Basically one just for each gluing curve in the Pan's decomposition. And secondly, there's the monodromy of the spatial part of the gauge field. Which is an angular variable, e to the I theta r, or roughly in the exponential of the integral over this interval of AXR. Again, R takes this range of values. What are these? These are nothing. And it turns out from the gauge theory that basically these variables are just conjugate to each other. They're conjugate pairs with respect to the Poisson bracket coming from the gauge theory. So the collection of AR theta R These are nothing but action angle variables. For the Hitchian moduli space, if I study it in the so-called complex structure I, well, the Hitchian moduli space is a hyperkähler space, and in order to define complex structure and associated symplectic structure, I have to make a choice. This is the one commonly called I. So what is this? Let me just recall this very briefly, but so that's the moduli space of pairs E and theta. This is a holomorphic vector bundle. And this is a one form with values in the adjoint, or in other words, a section of this space and the whole thing modulo SL2C gauge transformation. Well, so this space carries a natural symplectic structure coming from this way of looking at the Hitchian moduli space. And it turns out, well, these are action angle variables with respect to this complex structure, which means that these are the variables which exhibit basically the Hitchian moduli space as an integrable system. We have this kind of picture as a torus vibration. We have here a base B with coordinates A, R, and we have tori here with coordinates being exactly these angles. And if we can represent a phase space as a torus vibration, this is the same as saying it's an integrable system. Okay, so that's now, yes?
The base field is now integrated along I, so is it an open moduli? So E to the I theta R?
Here, well, okay, this is the integral over the interval on which we live. You can, I mean, this is equivalent to saying that by using the gauge transformations, you can make the spatial part constant, and then that's what you take.
So it's okay. An open moduli.
It's an open what?
It's an open moduli, so.
Yes, if you wish, it is, but.
In fact, the two-dimensional description will compactify on what?
So, okay, this is what I consider as the compact part. So I have always, of course, so this was in the Hamiltonian picture, so I always have time in addition. So this is the space of the two-dimensional sigma model. So this here is my I, and the target is the Hitchian moduli space.
Target is an elliptic curve. I mean, the curve, you compactify on the torus.
Yeah, it's a torus, but I have the omega background still in the game, so it makes it somewhat.
But you get the Hitchian, usually when you compactify on the curves on the given surface C, you get the Hitchian moduli space on that surface C.
Yeah, yeah, it's a different story, which in the end of the day should be related, of course, so.
But
well,
I guess because you said target is MH, but did you explain which MH?
Well, the MH associated, okay. MH of C, and okay, I should add, I always only have SU2 gauge groups. The C is always one and the same. So we started, so everything, the whole gauge theory is defined by choosing the Riemann surface. Well, in the end of the day, but maybe we postpone this to the discussion session. It should be related to this picture. Exactly. So there should be sort of a closing diamond in the end. But now we're going the other way, where we first compactify on C to get relation to AGT and so on.
Okay.
So that's a good point. Okay, so let me remark H0 or H epsilon 1, epsilon 2.
But you didn't explain which space of open strings, right?
Well, it's the space of open strings of this two-dimensional sigma model with a target MH, and okay, we have to
specify two brains.
Or the brains here, as I had mentioned, but maybe too briefly, the brains are just given by this setup, namely, well, the point was at the boundaries of this interval, one or the other circle shrinks to zero. So what it defines, what the gauge theory defines basically automatically, is a very specific boundary condition. So just gauge theory with boundary, sigma model with specific boundary condition is in this, say, topological sector equivalent to the gauge theory in the zero energy sector. So that is basically the claim. And so this boundary condition is not anything we have to choose by hands. It is really something which is coming automatically from studying the gauge theory in this particular setup.
But could also be described in terms of purely conventional.
I mean, the point is to try to get this, get more explicit understanding of what these boundary conditions are. So, and well, I cannot really repeat the whole story, but I will tell the answer which emerges. So that's what I want to do.
Could you remind us what Higgs bundle is again, right? That's the modulus.
The Higgs bundle, that's just what I recalled here. It's the, these are pairs, a holomorphic vector bundle, and one form on the surface with values in the adjoint, so a section of this one. So this is the definition of the Higgs bundle. Okay? Modulo SO2
so
Siegel transformations.
The Rs, what do you mean with the Rs?
So in the sigma model, these are part of the these are coordinates for the target.
Oh, I see, because these are traces of the power of pi squared or something, right?
This is a little more subtle, but maybe for the level the rank two. I mean, the A's should. I mean, okay, the A's I can take to be the eigenvalues of the Higgs field. But then, of course, I have a leftover Wahl symmetry, or I can try to parameterize them in terms of the use, so the traces of phi squared.
But that's sort of obvious in four dimensions, because this is how they are secure.
Yeah, exactly. So this is basically just something that we know from four dimensions. There's a non-trivial relationship between the ARs, which we're using here, and the U's. But let's not go into this branch too much here.
Those scalars are complex scalars, but how about the gauge?
No, here actually they're going to be real because we're taking a...
Well, you'll be taking real section, but in the Higgs moduli space, these are complex.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Okay.
So basically what we're seeing is, of course, that the physics of the gauge theory is wants to pick a real section in the Higgs moduli space.
But what about the gauge field? You also need two directions, right? In the story of Galois-Moore-Nice theory, you actually have to consider open and magnetic Wilson lines.
That is right. So there is a natural complexity. I mean, the gauge theory produces a natural complexification of these angular variables theta. However, here, and again, if we want to describe sort of the real section in the Hitchian moduli space, which sort of emerges here, then the thetas would be real variables. However, it is natural and indeed done sort of in the picture to complexify. So this is both natural from the point of view of gauge theory as well as, say, the Hitchin system, the Hitchin moduli space. So what I wanted to continue with was stating, just observing that from this setup, we know that this space H0, which is what we're interested in, that it is naturally a module over a space of, one could call it H epsilon 1 strings, or H epsilon 2 strings. So this is, in a sense, something which just comes from general nonsense of open 2D sigma models. So we can, if we have here, say, epsilon 2. So I can define the action of some element, call it A, on some vector psi in our space H0 from this diagram. So just the fusion of open strings defines me the action of these strings This is what we now then want to look at. And basically by the same general blah blah, it is easily seen that the space of epsilon strings naturally forms an algebra.
What's
Well, okay, I mean, from the point of view of gauge theory, okay, let's start with two-dimensional point of view. There it is, just the space of states which are obtained when putting the same boundary condition on both sides. I can try to do that. From the gauge theory, it will turn out, but that will come in a moment. This will be, so the elements of this space will be will correspond to Wilson or to Hooft loop observables. So naturally. So we have here boundary conditions. Maybe I can be so B epsilon 1, B epsilon 2. Now the idea. So these are boundary conditions defined just by the gauge theory, which I can put and study just from a purely two-dimensional point of view. If I put the same boundary condition, so what we're interested in is having different boundary conditions at the two ends, coming from the shrinking of circles, because different circles shrink. So the physical states are where we have these two different, we have two different boundary conditions corresponding to the two different shrinking circles. However, from the two-dimensional point of view, nobody prevents me to study the space which I get by putting the same boundary condition on both sides.
Which one?
I have a choice. Yes, I have two. Okay, I was just about to say this space naturally forms an algebra, so we're getting two algebras because I can take either epsilon 1 or epsilon 2. We have two algebras, and that's very important.
Only one of those conditions you put by the same one on both sides. Okay.
Yes, so yeah, okay, let's.
Can you make it a bi-algebra rather than a two?
Exactly, yeah, that's. Yes, that's a way of putting it. Form an algebra, so the diagram is the same, but now we have here, say, epsilon, 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 so the same epsilon everywhere, and I can choose epsilon to be either epsilon 1 or epsilon 2, so I'm getting two algebras. Say, call this algebra A sub epsilon. So the claim, and that's the result, but of course you have to do some analysis. The claim of Nekrasov-Witten is we can describe this algebra quite explicitly and concretely. This is the algebra obtained by deformation quantization. Quantization of the Hitchin moduli space, but now in a different complex structure, so which means we're using a different symplectic form in order to define the Poisson brackets with respect to which we define the deformation, and the epsilon is just what plays the role of H bar. So that is the claim. Let me be a little more specific about the claim. So this corresponds to a different way of looking at the Hitchin moduli space, namely as a moduli space of flat complex connections. D plus, say, curly A in SL2C. And, what this gives us is a natural set of generators for the algebra of functions on this Hitchin moduli space. Namely, we can take traces of holonomies, for example, as generators for the algebra of functions. So classically, I mean, if I put here 0, this is the thing where epsilon is epsilon equals h bar equals 0. So that's the classical algebra of functions on the Hitchin moduli space. which is the space we are quantizing here. So if we're taking traces of path ordered exponents of the integral over circles, cycles gamma on the Riemann surface, and this we may call L gamma. So we have here still a picture. We now add a closed curve gamma, integrating this connection A along this path. We're taking the trace, and thereby we're getting our observable that we're interested in. This is not, it's no coincidence. If I go to a real slice, to a particular real slice, it's the same L gamma which had appeared in my lecture on Liouville theory, which was the geodesic length operator. Namely, there's a real slice in Hitchin moduli space corresponding to Teichmüller space. And if we restrict to this slice, this is exactly the same object. So the symplectic structure corresponding to the complex structure J, there's a holomorphic symplectic structure corresponding to it. And what it defines as are the Poisson brackets, which now I can concretely realize as the Poisson brackets of these observables L gamma. And one can work out what it is. So this is something new. So, on quantization, L gamma is going to be represented by some operator. And, operator on what? It's an operator on the space we're interested in, this H epsilon 1, epsilon 2 of the sigma model. The action coming just from this diagram that is still over there. Now, the proposal of Nekrasov and Witten is that in this way, we already see part of the AGT correspondence emerging in the following sense, that this H epsilon 1, epsilon 2 is nothing but the space of conformal blocks of Liouville theory. Let's denote it like this. We have defined it in our lectures, even including Hilbert space structure and so on. So the proposal is this space is just the same. And the argument of Nekrasov and Witten is somewhat abstract and indirect. Namely, what we have seen is we have the action of two commuting algebras on this space. So one comes from, I can here attach an open string with boundary condition epsilon 1, say, from the left, and get a left action of A epsilon on psi. Or I could do the same thing, but attaching a string from A epsilon 2 from the right. So I'm getting a left and a right action, which just from the picture obviously commute with one another. And the argument of Nekrasov and Witten is, well, space of Liouville conformal blocks can be characterized, but this needs careful explanation by exactly this property, namely being a bimodule, if you wish, of the quantized algebra of functions on the Hitchin moduli space with two commuting actions with two different parameters associated to it. So let me put it on the blackboard just like this. Both have two actions of A epsilon 1, A epsilon 2. Well, I should perhaps explain, or maybe I skip this. In these actions on the Liouville side have appeared in Jerome Gomis's talk. Namely, this is what corresponds to the so-called loop operators in Liouville theory. So maybe I cut it short by just referring for an explanation of how the action on the space of Liouville conformal blocks comes about to Jerome Gomis's talk. The basic idea was basically to insert a degenerate field and take monodromies or holonomies when moving the degenerate field around closed cycles on the Riemann surface. So This is nice, but somewhat abstract and indirect. And furthermore, it doesn't give all of AGT. It doesn't really give the very precise quantitative statement that they have made. So it gives some identification here on the level of Hilbert spaces. Oof, I'm much too slow, but maybe I pause nevertheless for questions at this.
So from the gate theory point of view, so these operators should correspond to loop operators?
That's exactly right, yes.
But coming from the two ends of the interval, so they're actually linked.
They're linked, yes.
So they should not commute.
Indeed, that's sort of the catch. There is something very subtle about the precise sense in which they commute. And this is also true on the Liouville side, that if you think about it in Hilbert space terms, there's a similar issue, namely that, having to do with this self-duality. So you have unbounded operators on a Hilbert space which commute on a suitable dense domain of definition but not in the strict operator sense. There's something subtle about it. Nevertheless, I would see the argument of Nekrasov and Witten at least as a strong indication that what we're finding here should be the Liouville space of states, but I also have the feeling that this is a point which may require some more elucidation. So
do you mean commuting or do you mean the left action commute with the right action?
Yeah, it's the left action with the right action. So the algebra with parameter epsilon 1 commutes with the algebra with parameter epsilon 2. Actually, I'm also here somewhat imprecise. It turns out what is the relevant parameter for the respective algebras is the ratio epsilon 1 over epsilon 2 or epsilon 2 over epsilon 1. So this is what is called B, which is the same B as has appeared in the Liouville discussions, and so one algebra has deformation parameter B, the other has deformation parameter B inverse.
Yeah, the reason I'm saying is that there's no contradiction if they are left and right action, because so the two ends are the hop link, and that's the S matrix, modular S matrix. So the action normally, if you go from left action to right action, you have to multiply by the S matrix.
I'm not sure if what you have in mind directly applies to this setup. I mean, you're thinking of the Hopf link, say, relate in the relation to Chern-Simons theory and so on, that the Hopf link gives you...
Chern-Simons theory, just the mathematical fact that if you x on something, you have to use the antipode to go from left action to right action.
This is right, yes. So, okay, of course, you have the... There's confusion here, which I probably can, in the given time, only resolve partially. So what we want two algebras which act, basically, to be more clear, it is probably confusing to think of a right action in the sense that you have in mind. We're having two left actions, indeed. However, it just appears as a right action here because in terms of the picture, in terms of gluing open strings, it looks like, one comes from attaching open strings to the left side of the interval, the other from the right side. Nevertheless, as actions, these are going to be two left actions on the same space of states, right? So
that would be different.
Yes.
And the action, just from the point of view of Liouville theory,
mm-hmm.
Where can you comment on where it comes from?
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Because you find the space come from blocks,
yes.
For Liouville in a very different way, right?
Right. What I can do is, and I will come to this in the very end, I can study special cases for the conformal blocks where some of these inserted representations become degenerate. If in particular we have two such degenerate representations inserted, then what appears is the trivial representation in between. So I can insert such a thing into a Riemann surface. Then I can do the game to unfuse this. So I can take one of these degenerate fields and move it around on a circle. And then I can project back onto the contribution where we have intermediate representation vacuum. This is a natural operation that defines operators on the space of conformal blocks. It can be shown.
Oops. Looks like a loop around the circle, around the point.
It's again a loop gamma around a closed curve on the Riemann surface. It's the same type of gamma all the way through. So,
well, alternatively, you could use the Teichmuller description.
Yeah, in the Teichmuller description, it's even much nicer. It's just geodesic length operators. This is what I talked about in my lecture. So just you were asking for the Liouville incarnation of these guys, so that's what it is. Okay, so this finishes the first part, which was more introductory. So the main upshot, the main message which I want to take from it is that the low energy physics of the gauge theory basically here amounts in this setup to the quantization of the Hitchian moduli space. So what this sort of motivates us to do is to study in maybe somewhat more generality than it has been done before, the problem to quantize the Hitchian moduli spaces. So this is meant to be the second part. So, which is just consider the problem of quantization of the Hitchian moduli space as a problem in its own right. What I want to use, well, actually, here, let me even be more specific. So we want to quantize it in the complex structure, which is called J, which is the one we had been using here already. So, well, this is therefore, and this is motivated in this sense by the work of Nekrasov and Witten. So again, let me recall it is useful to represent the points in the Hitchian moduli space in terms of flat connections. But now the new thing which I want to add here is that we can represent this in terms of holomorphic data. Well, what we're using here is, of course, the complex structure on the on the Riemann surface when I split the flat connection into holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts. So the all the way through, and that will play an important role a little later, we have a dependence on the complex structure of the underlying surface, which means dependence on the UV coupling constants of the gauge theory in physical terms. In mathematical terms, what this description amounts to is a description of the Hitchian moduli space in terms of what is called local systems. So these are pairs of objects where here this is again what it was before, a holomorphic vector bundle. And this is a holomorphic connection, so basically, well, the 0-1 part of the flat connection. So we can locally represent it by a differential operator like this, where this is a 2x2 matrix in our case on the Riemann surface. And, holomorphic is important here, of course. So this is a standard fact about the Hitchian moduli space, and in fact, it, as a side remark, it gives us also a nice way of, thinking about these hyperkähler structures. One can generalize this description by putting some parameter, maybe call it epsilon here. So this depends on epsilon. And if we send epsilon to zero, basically this removes this thing, and what we then recover is the description of the Hitchian moduli space in the that we had previously. So I can introduce such a parameter naturally. Well, okay, let me just leave this. I don't really need it here. So, okay, let's think about these local systems. And a key remark, which in some sense is well known, but in the context of geometric Langlands. In fact, it was stressed also very much by Eppert in 95 ICMP lecture and in 2005 Langlands lectures. So the remark is, can always be represented by what is called an au-pair. So here, this is just a second order, locally, a second order differential operator of the form dy squared plus t of y, which transforms as projective connection if I change the coordinates. Let me explain a little bit. So first of all, the important thing is that the au-pair, I mean, this is a second order differential operator. I can study the solutions of the associated differential equation and thereby find a monotony representation, so representation of the fundamental group into PSO2C. So the point is this au-pair is supposed to have the same monotony in PSL2C, then my original connection. But in general, it has a certain number of extra called apparent singular points. So the original connection was only allowed to have singularities at the marked points, which are called z1 to zn. Now we have extra singularities, which in general is just needed for the following reason. So the notation is going to be w1 to wd. And the behavior of t of y near the singular points is of a very specific type. Call it plus eta k plus higher order terms. And as a quick explanation, let us note that this is, if you wish, little exercise that everybody is able to do. You can, by gauge transformation, always bring this connection to a very specific form. Which is like this. So there always exists a G. Well, this is so, of course, or not of course, what you find if you do the exercise. If you want to get one here, what you have to do is to invert or actually take the square root out of this off-diagonal element gamma. So there are going to be singularities whenever gamma has zeros. And this is just exactly these W's that we see here. So this holds away from the zeros WK of gamma of Y.
What does it mean that the quadratic differential operator is a projective connection?
Oh, it means that it does not, under change of coordinates on the Riemann surface, it does not transform as a quadratic differential. There's this inhomogeneous extra term defined in terms of a Schwarzschild derivative. Okay, so this is what you call a projective connection, which means it's just nothing but the classical limit of the transformation behavior of the energy momentum tensor. And that is where it comes from. I mean, that's closely related, of course, this remark. Now, another thing I have to use here. So there shouldn't be any monotony around these singular points WK, because after all, they're sort of gauge artifacts. They're not really singularities of the original connection. This doesn't come for free. In fact, it imposes some equation here between the terms which appear in the expansion around this singularity. The equation turns out to be kappa k squared plus eta k equals to zero. And a nice quick proof one finds in this 95 paper of Edwards. So let me do some example to make everything much more concrete and explicit. So for g equals to 0, t of y must have the following form. Y minus r squared plus right, so this is the form that t of y must have in the case of genus 0. And these all important relations here, which look somewhat innocent in this form, what they imply is now a system of equations which look as follows. So 0 must be, okay, we have the kappa k squared, and then just what you get by putting here y equals to wk in this in the rest. Of course, the term where WK where K prime equals K, so minus WK prime squared kappa K Y oops. Okay, this is a set of equations where k runs from 1 to the number of these apparent singularities, which was called D. So what is it? I mean, you can view it as a system of equation, as a system of linear equations for these so far undetermined coefficients HR. And in fact, if we have enough of these W's such that I get enough equations, then it gives me equations which will allow me to express H in terms of, well, the other variables, which are the W's and the kappas. We note that, well, just what are the parameters that we have in our differential operator? The deltas are fixed by, well, specifying the insertion that I insert externally. So these are fixed parameters, which I shall not talk about. But otherwise, we have here parameters h, w, and kappa. And now we see, okay, they're not all independent. The h's, if I have enough w's, then I can, in fact, express the h's as functions of the remaining variables, which are w's and kappas. So, okay, that's the next remark I want to make. So, in general, the good number of variables is 3g minus 3 plus n. That is easily seen. So, and in this case, the pairs of variables, kappa k, where k runs from 1 to 3g minus 3 plus n, well, these I can take according to what I have laid out here. I can take as local coordinates on the Hitchian moduli space. I mean, after all, we're just describing now the Hitchian moduli space in a somewhat unfamiliar way. So, and furthermore, well, the Hitchian moduli space had a symplectic structure. This gives us Poisson brackets for our coordinate functions. And it turns out these are just canonical. That is, the W's, the kappas, are nothing but the canonical conjugate momenta corresponding to the W's from this point of view. Okay, so these are nice coordinates, nice local coordinates on the Hitchian moduli space, which I find in this somewhat peculiar description. And okay, in this case, I already mentioned, I can solve this equation star, which came from the no monodromy condition. And what we get is HR expressed as a function of kappas and W's. Well, as somewhat anticipated by the notation, the H's are Hamiltonians. So let's just write down what, according to this, I would write down as the Hamiltonian equations, I mean the equations for time evolution. Oops, here I want kappa k. I take minus dhr divided by wk. So this is a nonlinear partial system, a nonlinear system of differential equations, and these equations are in fact known. And what they come from is well, the what they ensure, namely, then ensure that the monodromy of this au pair, or the second order differential operator d squared plus t of y, that this monodromy stays constant under variation of the complex structure of the underlying Riemann surface. It is here in our example parametrized by the insertion points ZR. So these are something that what is called isomonodromic deformation equations. The name which goes with this system of differential equations, which one could write out explicitly, but doesn't look so illuminating, that is something which is known from the 19th century. It's a so-called Gagnier system in genus zero. And well, it more recently it has been studied also in higher genus by people like Iwasaki and others. So basically, well, what I point out is mainly the connection of this with the theory of Hitchian moduli spaces. If you wish, what we identify in this way is a nice integrable structure of the Hitchian moduli space in the complex structure J, which arises as soon as we represent, not in terms just of flat connections, which is basically topological and independent of the complex structure, but in terms of holomorphic connections, which depends heavily on the complex structure of the underlying Riemann surface. So, okay, let me not put this down here. So now we just want to quantize. So WK hat. I mean, so I make my phase space coordinates that we have found here into operators in the standard fashion. So that's the commutational relations that I want to postulate. I may want to study a quantization scheme in which these are realized on holomorphic functions, well, of half of the phase space verbals. Let's take the W's. So psi of W and the Z's. Well, this is of course not considered as a parameter of my phase space, but I want to keep track of the dependence. So this is a parametric dependence on the complex structure on the Riemann surface. So, well, these are our wave functions. To get the Hamiltonians in the quantization, what I should do is to quantize this equation. So maybe instead of writing it down again, let me do it here with what I still have on the blackboard. By just erasing, and so the kappa becomes the derivative d to the fourth d squared by d w k squared. Here, okay, we see there's some ordering problem because we have the kappa and the w. Let's just pick the perhaps most symmetric and most natural one that we could pick. So here we write down a symmetric operator ordering. D by d w k prime. Well, everything is now, of course, with hats here and so on. So that's the equation we get. Right, so we have quantized this, and it defines us H now as a second order differential operator in W's. So that's what our quantum operator is now. But, well, what were the H's classically? These were the generators of the deformations of complex structure. So they were generating the variation of the phase space variables, which are induced by varying the complex structure, keeping fixed monodromies, which in a way you could think of as being here conserved quantities. So we want, in the quantization theory, we certainly want the H's are also describing variations of the complex structures. Well, let me maybe continue here. So the operators H are generators of deformations of complex structure. So they should act, but this can be, I mean, this is here coming a little bit as a ansatz, but it can be argued if you start playing around with D, the number of apparent singularities, and if you want a coherent picture, can be argued that we have no other choice but the one that I'm about to write. So it should just act as the derivative with respect to these complex structure moduli on our wave function. So, okay, if I have this, then I can put here d by dzr with b squared, and I can make all this into a differential operator, which I call dkbpz. And the equations that the wave functions in our quantization scheme have to satisfy are these. These are nothing but bpz null vector decoupling equations. So the key observation that we can make which basically explains what the BPZ, I mean, which explains this point a little bit. The key observation I can make is conformal blocks of Liouville theory. Well, we have learned how they're defined. However, it's certain conformal blocks, namely those with degenerate fields in them. So what this gives, I will explain this in a second, this gives a complete set of solutions to BPZ psi equals to zero. So what do I mean here? What we're talking about are the conformal blocks, which are the holomorphic parts of the following correlation functions. In the notation of my lectures, I have, in addition to the insertions we always had all the way through, now a couple of additional insertions, but with a very special value of these alphas, which is -1/2b. And it is these values of alpha where representation theory of the Virasoro algebra implies additional differential equations which determine the dependence of these guys with respect to the W's, and these are just the differential equations we have just found. Okay, so this is sort of the main message. So what we see here, quantization of the Hitchian moduli spaces leads in a very direct and neat way to Liouville theory. Maybe it gives us basically the BPZ null vector decoupling equations. And thanks to the fact, which I stress here, that the conformal blocks of Liouville theory, in a certain sense, which I don't want to explain here, but can be made more precise, the conformal blocks of Liouville theory are in fact a complete set of solutions. So this has to do with the behavior at the boundaries of moduli space, and that you can always factorize at the boundaries of moduli space in the way we had been discussing in my lectures. Now I'm already over time. I wanted to make a couple of concluding remarks. One being about relation to gauge theory, where I want to propose that in order to see this from the gauge theory more directly, what one should do is study surface operators. Well, maybe I skip this one, although it's a shame. I mean, the point is, if one starts thinking about surface operators, one is naturally led to consider generalizations of the Nekrasov partition function, where you have additional parameters describing the surface operator. And from the same classical analysis that Alde, Gaiotto, Gukov, Tachikawa, and Verlinde have done, you can see, well, the parameters that you're getting can actually, in a natural way, be mapped to the parameters we find here, the W's. So
maybe like a half an hour at 3:30.
I could, yes, okay.
Maybe that'd be better then.
No, I'm perfectly happy with that.
That sound good? Yeah. So 3:30.
Okay, then I stop here. That is finishes part B, and then I can have some time to properly finish the rest. Right. Thanks very much. Questions about this?
Questions about this.
Is that giant thing the BPZ?
Can you say it again? I didn't.
Is that giant operator over there the BPZ null vector operator?
Exactly. It is precisely this. I mean,
What is precisely this?
Well, this is precisely the operator which we find in BPZ null vector decoupling equations, actually, well, this choice of the operator ordering, if you work it out, what it produces here is the term. It's anti-commutator, which means just I order symmetrically.
It looks like Poisson bracket.
Yeah, that's notation, but okay, yeah, sorry. No, it's not Poisson bracket at all, it's just anti-commutator. So, okay, of course it gives here another second order pole term, if you write it in an ordering where you have differential operators ordered to the right. So what you find here, also dividing by some power of b squared, is minus 3 b to the minus 2 over 4 plus one half. And this is exactly the conformal dimension of this degenerate field. So say the symmetric, I mean the most natural normal ordering here, operator ordering, gives us then for free the conformal dimension of the degenerate field. It's kind of nice. So,
well,
but anyway, that's the
one question I have, which is that d, the number of apparent singularities, which I in fact don't have trigonal monotony.
Mm-hmm.
So this d is what does it correspond to from the point of view of? In other words, the way you introduced it, you kind of like it's a bit random, because you'd like to represent the SO2 connection by an operator.
Right.
And then you do. So first of all, there is some ambiguity to represent it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And also there will be different D's involved.
Yes.
So how does it?
I mean, okay, basically the statement is that the moduli space of local systems splits into components labeled by D. Right, so
right,
because.
But there's also a second issue, there isn't a unique way to represent a connection by an operator, by a projective connection, right? So could be many ways, the same connection could be
represented in many ways.
It's not just splits, but it's more like there is a union and then there are maps from
connections
with D points to
some equivalence relations.
There's equivalence relations which presumably have to do with the fact that, of course, these coordinates I'm getting by choosing a particular representation in this way are going to be local on the Hitchin moduli space. So,
likewise, that would correspond to splitting of conformal blocks of Liouville into direct sum.
Exactly. So what I think, or what I believe it can be mapped to, is exactly that if you think about here the conformal blocks with these degenerate fields, then you have additional parameters, and furthermore, well, for example, you can, in a weakly coupled description, you can represent the you have the Riemann surface in terms of.
For different D's, these are different conformal blocks, though, because these are different assertions.
Is this right? Yes.
These are live operators.
Yes.
Minus 1 over 2
D. Yes. So the claim is okay, you cannot
go. Quantization gives you many conformal blocks in some sense. This quantization procedure gives you many conformal blocks.
I'm basically getting the whole set of conformal blocks with varying numbers of D's. And
that somehow shows that from which Liouville. The moduli space of flat connections is somehow the wrong description. A much better description from the way the point of view that you described, that would be just the projective connections with the apparent singularities. That's what really naturally gives you particular conformal blocks.
This is right. Yes. And. But on the other hand, what I'm describing in this way are some open subsets of the Hitchin moduli space, right? So I can always. I can find components in the Hitchin moduli space where such description is appropriate, and it seems that it is just the beginning of the story, I think. I mean, I'm not claiming that I understand everything already, but it seems that indeed these components can be self-consistently quantized in the sense that I can construct from Liouville theory complete set of solutions to these consistency conditions which turned out to be the BPZ null vector decoupling equations.
Right. So for me, Hitchin moduli space is something that would rather I would think is related to the Kazuya algebra.
Oh, yeah, 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 okay.
So here you're trying to do the Rasur in some sense. And so maybe that's a source in a way.
Yeah, okay, so I should anticipate something which I wanted to talk about a little bit in the outlook, namely, there's always sort of two completely dual pictures. There's the Virasoro picture, and there is the Katsumori picture. Both are related by, well, on the one hand by this Greenfeld-Sokolov reduction, on the other hand, well, more generally, you could say they're always related by some version of what is called the Hitchin separation of variables, Sklianin separation of variables, which means there's a... Sklianin separation of variables, which means it's a map. Okay, on the classical level, it's just a change of coordinates on the Hitchin moduli space. Or in the Hitchin integrable system, you can do it. Sorry? Well, there should be something in general, but it hasn't been worked out. Actually, I mean, I've written up a story for genus 0. There is a story known for genus 1, but there's part of the story, well, there's a variant of the story known for higher genus, but I plan to work it out sort of in this language in a future paper, sort of, that would be. Well, okay, so first of all, there is a classical story, which is on the level of Hitchin integrable system and on the level of, the local systems, the flat connection. It's just a change of variables in the moduli space. How is it defined? Well, it's basically defined, you're starting with representing either A or theta, the Higgs field, maybe in the form alpha, beta, gamma, delta. And the point is you're introducing new coordinates in the moduli space by going to the zeros of an off-diagonal element, which for us is gamma. So these become the W's. And you can do something like alpha on WK. This gives you the dual coordinates with respect to the Poisson bracket, which I called kappa k. Actually, you can show that in this gauge transformation business, this is exactly how the kappa k's appear. They come from the diagonal elements of the flat connection. So there's just it just amounts to a change of variables. And my claim is one can trace it through. I mean, one can make a diamond of relations. Where one has here classical Hitchin, quantum Hitchin, Liouville, and here it would be this I call it MH with complex structure J, so flat connections and so on. So all this has a sort of Liouville picture in terms of second order differential operators and so on and so forth, and it has a Wessamino-Witten picture. Where here is Wessamino-Witten, here there's quantum Hitchin and so on. Here you have flat connections, but all is on the classical as well as on the quantum level, just a change of variables. So essentially there should be a complete duality between these two pictures. And that is sort of outlook. I wanted to say a few words on this in the end, but that is the picture which is, sorry?
And you can.
It's a preview. It's a preview.
Preview.
Yes. So
maybe we should break for lunch. Yeah.